Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Ever feel just, well, overwhelmed? You're scrolling online, talking to people, and it feels like there's this constant stream of things demanding your attention, your belief, maybe even your fear.
Yeah, it's a lot to navigate, trying to figure out what's real, what matters.
Exactly. Well, imagine dialing that feeling way, way back, like over 2,500 years back. We're going to look at a situation where being surrounded by powerful, strange beliefs was incredibly intense and real.
And we actually have this amazing firsthand account of how someone tried to guide people through that exact situation.
We do. We're diving into a specific text today, a letter from the prophet Jeremiah.
Right. And it's written to the Jewish exiles who were living in Babylon. You have to picture their situation. They've been forcibly removed from their homeland, their culture, everything familiar.
And dropped right into the heart of the Babylonian Empire, a place just saturated with a completely different religious system.
Yeah, and not subtly different either. Babylon was famous for its idols, huge, imposing statues, gold, silver, wood. These weren't just hidden away.
No, they were part of public life. Carried in processions. Jeremiah's letter even mentions they were designed to inspire awe, maybe a bit of fear in people.
So the exiles are seeing all this power and ceremony around these foreign gods. It must have been incredibly confusing, maybe even tempting.
For sure. So our mission, our deep dive today, is to unpack Jeremiah's advice. How did he tell them to handle this? To keep their own faith, their own perspective, surrounded by all this?
What arguments did he use against these Babylonian idols that seem so powerful? And, you know, what can we maybe take away from his ancient guidance for our own times? Because we definitely have our own share of things competing for our belief.
Okay, so where does Jeremiah start? How does he first address this potentially overwhelming scene?
He jumps right in, acknowledging it. He warns them straight up, basically saying, look, take care you don't become like these foreigners, and crucially, don't let fear possess you when you see these idols being paraded around.
So right off the bat, it's don't be intimidated, don't let the spectacle get to you.
Exactly. And even as they're watching the Babylonians worship these statues, he tells the exiles to say inwardly in their hearts, you, Lord, are the one to be worshipped.
That's interesting. It's an internal anchor, isn't it? A focus on their own conviction.
Yeah.
Even when the external environment is pushing something else.
It really emphasizes that inner strength, that personal compass, when everything outside seems to be pointing another way. He's not telling them to start arguments in the street,
right?
But to hold firm inside. And then right after that initial warning, he just launches into this incredibly detailed takedown of the idols themselves.
Yeah.
He really goes after their fundamental nature.
He doesn't pull any punches, does he? He starts with the fact that they're just things.
Yeah.
Made things.
Yeah, made by human hands. He points out, you know, a woodworker carves it, a goldsmith plates it. They even smooth its tongue, but it can't speak.
It really deflates the whole idea of inherent power,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're just crafted objects.
Yeah, completely. Dependent on human skill just to exist. And then he adds these details, like how they're dressed up in purple robes, given gold and silver.
Almost like dolls, he implies. He even mentions people bringing gold to adorn them, making crowns for them. It kind of makes them seem
a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, almost silly. It demystifies them, shows they're products of human activity, not divine beings.
And he keeps going on this physical theme. He talks about their vulnerability. Okay, they might look fancy, covered in gold, but they still get covered in dust from the temple. They're susceptible to rust, tarnish. They can't even wipe their own faces or protect themselves.
It's such a practical, down-to-earth critique. These supposedly powerful deities can't even handle a bit of dust.
And it gets even more visceral. He mentions creatures, bats, swallows, even cats landing on their bodies and heads.
Wow. Imagine seeing that a cat just perched on the head of a god statue. That really undercuts the whole aura of power.
It does. It's a stark contrast between the imposing image and the reality of this static, defenseless object. It forces you to see it differently.
And then there's the fact they can't even move on their own.
Right. They have to be carried. If one falls over, it can't get back up by itself. Someone has to pick it up.
It seems so basic, but it's such a powerful point. If something needs human help just to stand upright or get from A to B, how can it possibly have any real power over, you know, your life or the world?
It really drives home their complete dependence on people. They're passive. And he uses this really stark image offerings are set before them as if they were for the dead.
Oof. Yeah, that paints a picture of lifelessness. It's a one-way street, this worship.
Totally. So after dismantling the physical nature of the idols, Jeremiah then shifts focus a bit, looking at the people around the idols, the priests, the rituals.
The human element. And what does he observe there? Is it all pious devotion?
Not exactly. He points out some, let's say, less than noble practices. He mentions priests selling the sacrifices offered to the gods for their own profit.
Really? So people bring offerings and the priests are just pocketing the proceeds?
Or at least taking a cut. He says their wives would salt and keep some of the meat, not even sharing leftovers with the poor or sick. It suggests the system isn't purely about serving the gods.
It sounds like there's a healthy dose of self-interest mixed in. What does that imply about the authority of the idols themselves?
Well, it suggests the human intermediaries might be more focused on their own gain. He even mentions ritually unclean women sometimes handling the sacrifices meant for these gods.
Which would normally be a huge taboo, right?
Absolutely. So him pointing that out kind of undermines the whole idea of the sacredness surrounding these practices. It hints at human manipulation, maybe even a lack of real belief among some involved.
It paints this picture where the gods seem almost like props in a very human drama of, well, economics and social practice.
And then he gets really specific about what these gods can't do. It's a long list.
Like what?
They can't reward people or punish them. They can't make someone a king or remove a king. They can't give wealth or, conversely, make someone poor. They can't even enforce oaths made in their name.
So all the things you'd kind of expect a deity to be involved in, justice, power, providence, he says they're completely incapable of any of it.
Exactly. He goes on. They can't give rain. They can't restore sight to the blind. They can't rescue the wronged or help widows and orphans. It's this comprehensive list of inabilities.
He's basically saying, look at what real power looks like, what real help involves these things. They do none of that.
Precisely. It's a direct challenge to the whole premise of their divinity, which then leads him to this really interesting contrast.
What does he contrast them with?
With the natural world, the sun, the moon, the stars, lightning, wind, clouds, even fire.
Ah, okay. So inanimate statues versus active forces of nature.
Yes. He portrays these natural elements as active, obedient, fulfilling a purpose set for them by a higher power. The sun shines, the clouds bring rain when commanded. They do things, they have an effect.
Unlike the idols, which just sit there.
Exactly. The contrast highlights the difference between something genuinely powerful and purposeful, even if it's just nature following its course, and something utterly inert and artificial. It makes the idols look even more pointless by comparison.
That's a clever rhetorical move. Forget the fancy statues, look at the sky, look at the weather. That's where you see real power in action.
And then, to really hammer it home, he uses a series of really vivid analogies at the end.
Okay, what comparisons does he make?
He compares an idol to, first, a scarecrow in a cucumber patch.
A scarecrow? Why that?
Well, it looks like a guard. It's meant to protect, but ultimately it does nothing. It can't even protect itself, let alone the cucumbers. It's just a passive object.
Got it. Powerless despite appearances. What else?
Then, a thorn bush in a garden. Birds might land on it, but it serves no real positive purpose. It's just there, maybe even a nuisance.
Okay, so useless, maybe even slightly negative.
He also compares them to a broken pot, completely useless, ready to be discarded. And then, perhaps the most striking one.
Yes.
A corpse cast out into the darkness.
Whoa. That's grim. But it really emphasizes the absolute lack of life and agency.
It does. It's the ultimate image of powerlessness and decay. And he adds that even their expensive coverings, the gold and silver, will eventually tarnish and rot away. Nothing about them lasts or has inherent worth.
So scarecrow, thornbush, broken pot, corpse. It's a devastating sequence of images. What's the final takeaway he offers the exiles after all this critique?
He concludes by saying that a righteous person who has no idols is far better off and will be kept far from disgrace. It's a message of reassurance. You're not missing out by rejecting these things. You're actually in a stronger, better position.
Okay, let's quickly recap Jeremiah's main points here. He's hitting the idols on multiple fronts.
Yeah, first, their basic materiality. They're just crafted objects, wood and metal.
Second, their utter dependence on humans for creation, adornment, movement, even just staying upright.
Third, the dubious, sometimes self-serving human practices surrounding them.
Fourth, their complete inability to act. They can't reward, punish, help, or control anything.
And finally, their inferiority compared to the active, purposeful forces of the natural world, capped off with those images of utter worthlessness.
It's a really systematic dismantling, using observation and reason. He's encouraging the exiles to just look closely and think clearly about what they're seeing.
Exactly. And it's fascinating how this ancient critique, this call to look past the surface and question where power and value really lie, still feels relevant.
It really does. Because, okay, most of us aren't literally surrounded by statues of Babylonian gods today.
Right.
But it makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What are the things in our world, in our culture, that maybe get treated with a similar kind of unquestioned reverence? Things that seem powerful or impressive on the surface.
But might lack real substance underneath. Or things we invest perhaps too much trust or importance in. What might be the modern equivalents of these idols?
That's the big question to chew on, I think. If Jeremiah were writing a letter to us here and now, navigating our world of social media, 24-hour news, technology, consumerism, what specific things might he point to?
What idols might he warn us against giving our ultimate trust or fear to? And maybe more importantly, what timeless principles of discernment, of seeing things clearly for what they are, might he emphasize for us today?
Something to definitely keep thinking about.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.